One more day to go. Tomorrow is Election Day. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, what the election means for African Americans as President Barack Obama leaves office. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, Understanding Palliative Care, a preview of Baptist Health's AgeWell Conference. Free cab rides this week around town. We'll tell you how you can get them. And Culpepper on Sports, all of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, Election Day is tomorrow. Hard to believe this long election season is almost at an end. And of course, there will be lots to watch for on election night as both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump hope for victory. Today and tomorrow, Clinton and Trump are barnstorming swing states, including Florida, making their last pitch to the voters. Meanwhile, whatever the outcome, many activist groups and Americans of all stripes are planning for a post-election landscape. This morning, we're taking a closer look at that as we welcome Amy Walters. She's a reporter for the PRX program Reveal, affiliated with the Center for Investigative Reporting. She's here in Jacksonville working on a story looking at the future of the Black Lives Matter movement and what African Americans think will be the legacy of President Barack Obama after Election Day. Amy Walters, good morning.
Hi, how are you? It's great to be here, Melissa.
It's great to have you with us. And the number to join in on this conversation is 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. So you've come on over to Florida from Northern California, talking to voters. You went out yesterday for the traditional Souls to the Polls voter turnout drive, which is popular, particularly in African-American communities. And you're looking at taking the pulse of African-American voters as we edge closer to the election. What are you finding out?
It's really interesting. I mean, I kind of came at this because such a big theme this year has been Black Lives Matter, and actually for a couple of years. And I wanted to see what was going to happen with that movement after there's no longer an African-American president. What happens with the next administration? So, that was the story that I've been reporting on. And what I saw yesterday, I mean, we weren't really talking about Black Lives Matter per se. And it's an interesting idea. I think a lot of people that I've spoken to, including leaders in the movement, people involved, will say, you know, it's a hashtag, it's a thing we say, but it's not necessarily something that we prescribe to as far as, you know, a movement. And not all of us feel exactly the same way. What people were saying yesterday, though, is just get out the vote. I mean, I think that was the main theme here in Jacksonville. It's an interesting place. It's always been red, but just barely. Uh-huh. as far as how people end up voting, the African American vote is largely Democratic, and that was the big push as far as what they were doing, and a lot of people really wanted to get Hillary in office. I think there's been a lot of talk now that there's been less excitement amongst the African American community just getting out to vote because there's not a Black candidate. But a lot of people there were very excited. It was a little rainy, so I don't know if everybody who was going to go out was out, but there were people definitely pushing.
Yeah, and it's 549-2937 to join the conversation as we look at the future of the Black Lives Matter movement after Election Day with Reveal reporter Amy Walters. And you mentioned not everyone is necessarily on the same page when it comes to that movement and also their thoughts about the legacy of the nation's first African-American president.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's interesting because everybody not being on the same page. I came out from California, Northern California, to Jacksonville. But one of the founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, Alicia Garza, is from the Bay Area. And I've talked to people in Jacksonville about what they hope for Black Lives Matter. And they have a different, very different vision for it than someone in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is a more progressive, more liberal society. They're pushing for things like the LGBTQ movement, things like that. And the Black Lives Matter movement here, people that are involved, they are still focused on, you know, getting guns off the streets and these police shootings. They don't really want to be involved with transgender things that are issues for people in the Bay Area.
So this issue of police shootings, that came up in your conversations?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and we were talking about this earlier. One person who I'm really focusing on, and honestly, the reason I'm here in Jacksonville, is the father of Jordan Davis, Ron Davis. You'll remember Jordan Davis was shot and killed at the Gate gas station by Michael Dunn in 2012 here. And Jordan Davis, the last thing he wanted to be, Ron Davis, the last thing he wanted to be involved in is Black Lives Matter. He didn't want to be part of this club. No one does. So one of the things that he's obviously been sort of thrust into this movement, and, you know, what happened to him wasn't a police shooting, but he's seen all the boys, the women, the people's lives that have been lost since Jordan Davis's life was lost. And so he's obviously now involved in this other part of the movement.
Right. And when you look at this movement, which has really been vocal on the issues of not just police-involved shootings, but mass incarceration, and just a general protest movement against perceived inequities in the criminal justice system, depending on who wins the election tomorrow night, you would wonder what the way forward would be for a movement such as this.
Right. I mean, when you say tomorrow night, I feel like it's never going to happen, but it is. It's really coming up. And everybody is very aware that there is not going to be another African-American president. And there's a lot of fear that there won't be another African-American president in the lifetimes of a lot of the people that I've spoken to. But the woman I spoke to who's organized, co-founded Black Lives Matter, Elisa Garza, in the Bay Area, she actually isn't supporting either candidate. She's come out against Trump. Obviously, there's a lot of issues with Trump from the African American community. He's perceived by a lot of people as just blatantly racist. But even Clinton, she's been very disappointed by the crime bill he passed in 1994, or President Clinton passed in 1994, and is anxious that Hillary Clinton could follow in those footsteps. Hillary Clinton has said that she will not do that, but there's still a little wait-and-see attitude. But then, you know, Lucy McBath, Jordan Davis's mother, was on the stage at the DNC with Hillary Clinton, has backed her from the very beginning. And Hillary Clinton has backed a lot of the mothers of the movement, and so they're hoping that she's going to be able to take them forward.
And lots of calls as we speak with Amy Walters. She's a reporter for the nationally distributed PRX program Reveal. We're getting a preview of her story, looking at the future of the Black Lives Matter movement after Election Day. 549-2937. Jeff is in St. Augustine. Hi, Jeff. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Great topic. I had three quick points. One was, I think Donald Trump has raised an interesting point about white politicians taking the black vote for granted and then not really doing much. I don't 100% agree with that position, but I think it is something that should be considered. The second point was we evacuated for Hurricane Matthew to a conservative area of upstate South Carolina, where my wife's family lives. And, you know, they were telling me that when they turn on the TV and see black people rioting in St. Louis, or, you know, cars getting smashed and police cars getting overturned, that to them is Black Lives Matter. Now, those obviously aren't the Black Lives Matter people, and these people are not hard right on all issues. I mean, they don't believe with stand your ground and concealed carry and stuff like that. But when they look at the divide, you know, they see Black Lives Matter way, way, way away from them. And I just don't think that's accurate, but that's, you know, their perspective. And the last thing is, you know, Obama will have no legacy if Trump is elected. It'll be, unfortunately, you know, obviously it'll be in the history books as a black president, but, you know, basically everything he will have accomplished is promised to be reversed in the first 100 days.
Thanks, Jeff. Three interesting points there from Jeff. Number one, Donald Trump's rhetoric on the campaign trail that Democrats take the black vote for granted. Mm-hmm. Number two, a lot of white Americans see Black Lives Matter as an extremist, even violent group. And number three, President Obama in the final days of this campaign has been exhorting black voters to continue his legacy by voting for Hillary Clinton. How are all these messages being perceived?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I mean, as I said, I haven't been here too long, but I did go out to the polls activities yesterday and talk to some voters, maybe about 10. And out of 10 of them, I did talk to one voter. He hadn't voted yet, but he was African-American, and he said he was voting for Trump. So those voters exist, and I think that we've seen them, but they're not a lot of them. I think the second point about that Hillary's legacy or Obama's legacy continuing with Hillary. I mean, definitely I think that is something that a lot of the African American community. I mean, when I talked to people yesterday, there were a lot of voters for Hillary, and that was the exact thing that they said that. If we vote for Trump, I spoke to one woman yesterday who said that if Trump wins, she's leaving the country. Actually, I think that was two women. And yesterday, the local paper endorsed Trump, right? So she also was about to boycott the local paper. So, I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that definitely believe that. And I think I got these in the wrong order. But your other point about Black Lives Matter, people seeing that as a protest movement, you know, one of the women that I spoke with, Alicia Garza, in San Francisco, started out with a Facebook post writing about Black Lives Matter, and then it turned into a hashtag, and now it is what it is. She was very clear that Black Lives Matter is not just a protest movement anymore. And the truth is, you know, with movements like this, there is going to be protests, and I'm sure we'll continue to see Black Lives Matter related protests. But they've actually moved into the political sphere also. I mean, there's been a couple of prosecutors in Chicago and Cuyahoga County in Cleveland, and that they've kept from being reelected because they thought that they were sympathetic with police that had shot unarmed black people, and had continued to support those police officers. I mean, right now, I guess in Orlando, you have an African American who could be the first state's attorney, Aramis Ayala. And this, you know, I don't know if it's directly related to Black Lives Matter, but that influence has moved into politics. The question is how much. These are very local issues, and so the question is how much a president, any president, could have on those specific issues. You know, mm-hmm. Police shootings.
Susan on the South Side. Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Hi, I would just say that I would really encourage anybody who's concerned with the Black Lives Matter movement or even the youth, you know, in Florida in particular, to go out and vote tomorrow beginning at 7 a.m., although they might not want to wake up that early, for two reasons. One is because one of the Supreme Court justices for the state of Florida, Justice Charles Kennedy, he has written an opinion regarding juries not having to unanimously impose the death penalty. And he is also on Trump's shortlist for SCOTUS nominees. I think that's very important to young people and also to minorities, and particularly people who are concerned with the prison or the school-to-prison pipeline. I'd also say for young people, if they want to have any kind of chance of being able to go to college, if they make under $100,000 a year, the only chance they have to do that is going to be through Hillary Clinton, as well as people who are older and want to refinance, you know, high-interest student loans. Their only chance will be with Hillary Clinton. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that call. Calls from all over the listening area. Let us know what your opinion is. Ben is in Fruit Cove. Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm one of those conflicted voters, but on this Black Lives Matter, it strikes me that part of that has to do with sentencing reform and drug law reform, because part of it has to do with economics, and there is bipartisan support in the Senate. There's Cory Booker and Rand Paul, and there's bipartisan support for those things. And if we, you know, things don't happen in a vacuum, and if we don't deal with the whole problem, and you know, the Black Lives Matter movement is focusing on one part of the problem, but if we don't deal with the whole problem, if we don't fix our drug laws, if we don't deal with sentencing reform, and if we don't figure out how to let things where there is bipartisan support, like the what I just mentioned in the Senate, move forward, I don't see how we fix these things.
Thanks, Ben.
And that's frustrating. The partisanship, just, you know, my team, rah, rah, that doesn't work. That doesn't fix and solve the problems for these people.
Thank you, Ben. He's right. He's absolutely right in that increasingly, Amy, there is an emerging bipartisan consensus that mm-hmm. we need to take a deep look at structural criminal justice reform. What about his point of view?
You know, that is definitely something that came up. And I think, everybody that I spoke to has seen, you know, all the efforts that Obama has tried to make, and he's been stymied a lot of the time. I think that he hasn't been able to make gun control changes that he's wanted to make. Very recently, he's done this clemency program and kept a lot of people who had been sentenced for nonviolent crimes. They'd gotten them out of prison, but this is sort of a slow-going process, and I think that there's a lot of members of the African-American community who would like to see it move quicker, there be more people. But this is a question. I mean, and I think we've been asking it a lot this election cycle, how much power does the president actually have? Because that's been a big issue during Obama's presidency. And I think it will continue to be, and it really does depend on how this election goes. One or the other presidential candidates can win, but what happens with the Senate?
Todd in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Todd. Happy Monday. Happy election eve. Good morning.
Good morning, Alyssa and your guests. Black Lives Matter, is not a movement in the sense of people joining an organization. This came about because of police brutality that still exists. But what we're dealing with really is institutionalized racism. And until we come to grips with that, we're going to continue to have the situation we have in America regarding African Americans. I don't see Black Lives Matter as being a violent group, as some people have said. Dr. King, and I'm paraphrasing here, Dr. King said riots the response of the voiceless. And I think that's very important to understand that you always have these reactions when somebody is gunned down, unarmed person is gunned down, you're going to have these flashpoints. So I think that the main issue here that people have to get at, and I think a lot of your callers have said it, I mean, it's institutionalized, and it has been since the end of the Civil War. And these laws have to be overturned before we have any real progress. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah. No, I think, and that was, there were several people I spoke to yesterday who, said that this a Trump presidency would mean going back 50, 40, years to pre-civil rights movement. I mean, this has happened. And I think, in Jacksonville here in Duval County, I'm getting it. You feel it more than most places. I mean, this is a very divided community. It is the South. And I think that there are lingering feelings and thoughts and institutions, as your caller said, that exist that are do have tendencies.
As someone who's just kind of dropped in here from the West Coast, it's interesting to get the perspective of a visitor
who's
only here for a week.
That's right.
What's your overwhelming impression?
Well, I came here, as I told you initially, because of Ron Davis and Jordan Davis and what happened and his sort of being launched into this movement unwillingly. Though he's definitely he's working with his foundation, the Jordan Davis Foundation, and doing a lot of things now because of what happened to Jordan. But when I looked at it, I mean, the county's huge. The city, the largest in Florida, right?
Largest city in the country in terms of landmass because they consolidated the city and the county back in the 60s.
And the population's larger than Miami, is that correct?
Yeah.
Which is very surprising to me. And it's... It's pink. It's not. In recent elections voted Republican, but more registered Democrats than Republicans. It's just fascinating, kind of at every angle. And so it was interesting to me to see how this goes. I mean, people that I've spoken to don't see a huge change this election, but I think for the Democratic Party, what they've been pushing for is to just not keep it from going more red, and somehow that would, the hope is for them to keep the state blue. But we'll see, because it doesn't look like anyone knows it's going to happen in Florida yet.
I think you're absolutely right. Polling showing Trump and Clinton within a point of each other in Florida one day out. Early voting ended in Duval with Democrats outpacing Republicans, but of course, Election Day tomorrow, we are expecting to see many Republican voters turn out. Dale in Avondale. Hi, Dale. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. How are you today?
Okay, thanks. Go right ahead.
Fantastic. I think what we're dealing with, much that was said by the previous caller, but it goes a little bit beyond the institutional racism. It goes to the racism that still exists very much, that is alive and well in this country today. I think that a lot of people don't like to think of themselves as racist, but in actuality, their actions and their thoughts betray that. As far as Black Lives Matter is concerned, I think that, you know, that organization needs a better structure, and it has to be something, you know, invention is the, what's the old saying? Invention is the product of necessity. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when you have a situation like that, there has to be a structure. There has to be a head. There has to be, like with Dr. King, there was someone there that was responsible for the actions of that of those groups. And as far as Donald Trump is concerned, I don't think we would go back 60 years. I think we would go back 160 years in this country. And I really don't think that that's what people really want. But at the same time, you know, people have to, you know, dig deep within themselves and say, hey, you know, if I feel a certain way, do I want to live a certain way?
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Dale.
No, I think that that's definitely, I mean, and Black Lives Matter is interesting. I mean, you know, it is a hashtag. It started as a hashtag. It's turned into more of a movement, but it's different in different places and different people want different things. You know, yesterday I did speak with the head of the NAACP here in Jacksonville, and he explained to me that they are trying to put together some sort of policy, hopes and dreams for the next administration, but it's not the next administration yet. So that hasn't come to pass. But I think that he's not alone. There's a lot of people now that are thinking we need to figure something out to make sure that our goals are met.
In the meantime, we'll listen for your story on the PRX program Reveal, affiliated with the Center for Investigative Reporting, that airs here on 89.9. She's reporter Amy Walters, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this, Melissa.
Much more still ahead later. Cole Pepper as the Jaguars lose again. Free cab rides this week, courtesy of Farrah and Farrah. We'll tell you why. But up next, revolutionizing palliative care here on the First Coast.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Before you head to the polls, do you know what's on your ballot? Let WJACT's 2016 elections page be your guide. State amendments and local referenda, judges up for retention, interviews with candidates for local and state office. It's all there. Click the 2016 elections banner on WJCTnews.org and tune in to 89.9 on election night, November 8th, for live coverage of the return starting at 7.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the framers of the U.S. Constitution gave us three separate branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial, to keep any one person or group from having too much power, how the U.S. government is supposed to work, and why many think the system is broken. Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
WJCT and Vistar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped at WJCT and all Vistar Credit Union locations and two men in a truck at 8849 Arlington Expressway. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Welcome back. Well, Baptist AgeWell's annual conference is coming up this Friday on the UNF campus, an event for seniors and their caregivers with the theme of palliative care, any age, any stage. It's needed. Many people don't even understand what palliative care is and that it can help older adults with the symptoms, pain, and stress of a serious illness. Right now, we're welcoming a national expert. She's Diane Meyer, MD, director of the Center for Palliative Care and professor of geriatrics and palliative medicine at Mount Sinai in New York. Dr. Meyer, thanks for being with us on the line.
Thank you for inviting me.
And here in studio, Dr. Andrew Daigle. He's senior medical director for community palliative consultants and specialist with Baptist Health. Dr. Daigle, good morning to you.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Meyer, let's begin with you. You're actually the recipient of a Genius Award from the prestigious MacArthur Fellowship, and you'll be giving the keynote address at the Baptist AgeWell Conference. And it's fascinating to learn that under your leadership, the number of palliative care programs across the country in hospitals has more than tripled over the last 10 years. How have you been able to bring this change about? Because clearly there's a need for these kinds of programs.
That's a great question. Why 10 years ago did we have so few, and now the great majority of hospitals have invested in palliative care teams? I think it's a combination of reasons. One is we have an aging society. 10,000 baby boomers turn 65 every single day. I'm going to be in that number next April myself. And our society has never seen that kind of growth in the older adult population. And of course, what comes with getting older is various chronic diseases, things like arthritis or heart disease or emphysema, difficulty breathing, cancer, memory loss, things like stroke or heart attacks. And this is just a natural part of getting older. And what comes with that is living with the consequences of those diseases. So we're lucky in that the advances of modern medicine mean we don't die from these things as quickly as we used to. Instead, we live for many, many years. And the goal of palliative care is to try to make those extra years worth having, to bring quality to those days, and to make sure that suffering, whether it's physical or emotional or practical, is addressed.
Sure. And one of the great visions you've been able to really bring about, a paradigm shift in this field, is uncoupling this idea of palliative care from death and dying, but focusing on the living patient, however long they might have to live, right?
Yes, exactly. And I'll tell you an example that will make this clear. So a colleague of mine, a young woman who just finished her internal medicine residency at Mount Sinai, which is the hospital that I work at, finished her residency and delivered her first baby in August, and a couple weeks later noticed that she was short of breath. She's 29 years old, 30 years old, went to see her doctor and was diagnosed with a lymphoma in the center of her chest, a mediastinal lymphoma. Not good news. Young woman, new baby, went to the big cancer center in New York City and spoke to the oncologist there. And when they were done with their conversation, he asked her if she had any questions. And she said, well, I assume you provide palliative care at the same time as cancer care. And he said to her, why would you need palliative care? You're not dying. And of course, the goal in this 30-year-old was cure. And with bone marrow transplant, she has a very good shot at cure. And she said, I'm not going through this very painful and difficult treatment without the added layer of support from a palliative care team. And at the cancer hospital, they couldn't provide that. So she had to get her palliative care from us at Mount Sinai while she got her cancer care at the big cancer hospital down the street. And as she says now, and she does appear to be cured from her disease, she says now she could never have gotten through this treatment.
Wow.
Without the support that we were able to give her at the same time that she got the best quality of cancer care that's available. And so I think that's a good example of someone where the young woman, her goal and our goal in the medical profession is to cure her, and I think we may have succeeded in curing her. But not only the burden of the diagnosis, new mom, new baby, oh, that was just devastating for them, but also the intensity of the treatment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very difficult.
And let me bring in Dr. Daigle. Andrew Daigle, your Senior Medical Director for Community Palliative Consultants, Specialist at Baptist Health. This is giving listeners a window into Dr. Meyer's keynote address coming up Friday at the AgeWell Conference. Lots of resources locally for people.
Absolutely. We're very excited about how palliative medicine has grown in the Northeast Florida in our area since we've been able to expand, especially our inpatient consult service. And really, segueing on what Dr. Myers is saying, that the patients and family members are expecting and really deserving that added layer of support for symptom management, for communication, helping to address the concerns of the patients and the family members, especially when dealing with serious and advanced conditions. Mm-hmm. And for us to be able to bring that expertise to address those physical, emotional, and any area of suffering through our interdisciplinary team.
And this is all happening, let me correct myself, Saturday, not Friday. It's Baptist AgeWell's annual conference this Saturday on the UNF campus. This is an event that seniors and their caregivers need to attend. The theme is palliative care, any age, any stage. And Dr. Meyer, such a pleasure to get your insights, as they're so well regarded, and sure to be lots of interest in your talk this weekend here in Jacksonville. Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Dr. Daigle. We were joined by Dr. Diane Meyer, Director of the Center for Palliative Care, Professor of Geriatrics and Palliative Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York. Dr. Andrew Daigle, Senior Medical Director for Community Palliative Consultants and Specialist with Baptist Health. To register for that Saturday event, just go to carepartners.eventbrite.com. Still coming up, Culpepper as the Jaguars lose yet again. But up next, how you can snag a free cab ride this week in Jacksonville. That's in a moment.
on the next Fresh Air, Gary Trudeau, the creator of the comic strip Doonesbury. He's the first newspaper comic strip artist to win a Pulitzer Prize. Donald Trump has made several appearances in the strip, dating back to 1987. Trudeau has a new collection of his Trump-related strips called Huge, 30 Years of Doonesbury on Trump. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Lydia Bastianich.
WJCT and FSCJ Artist Series present an intimate conversation with Lydia Bastianich, host of PBS's Lydia's Kitchen. The event is Saturday, December 3rd at 8 p.m. at the Times Union Center. Join us for an evening of conversation and storytelling, celebrating our love of Italian food. VIP tickets available. Ticket info at fscjartistseries.org.
So join me. Life is a combination of magic and pasta. Noi che felicità.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville personal injury attorneys Farah and Farah are helping keep Jacksonville and surrounding areas safe this week by offering free cab rides, and that includes gratuity. And this is open to all military personnel in honor of Veterans Day, which is coming up Friday. Now, the free cab rides kick off today, and they run through Saturday. Eddie Farah joins us now with more about his firm's Keep Jack Safe initiative. Eddie, good to see you.
Thanks, Melissa.
And now good to have you. And you know, you started this on New Year's Eve a year or two ago, and it was such a hit. You've extended it. Now you're doing a Veterans Day offer, which is open to anyone who's served, right?
That's right. Now we did a New Year's Eve last year. We'll do it again this year. And we did 4th of July this year. And now we're doing it for veterans. We call it Veterans Week. It's more than just a Veterans Day at Farah and Farah. And we're offering free cab rides to all military personnel for all their doctor appointments, there and back. So, and this extends through the weekend, so you're out celebrating Veterans Day. You can light up the town and not worry about it and get a free cab ride home.
Very
and
cool,
so,
yeah.
So it's all week long, and all you have to do is go to our keepjacksafe.org website. We have an app there that you can download, or you can download the promo code.
And give the code to the cab driver.
You can just give the you can give the promo code to the cab driver. That will give you a free cab ride to where you're going and back. You can also go to Ztrip, which is now, you know, these taxi cab companies have a sort of an Uber-esque type app, and you can download that app and use the promo code for to schedule your free cab ride.
And this goes all week, as you said. Though there will be all kinds of Week of Valor events in Jacksonville, culminating with the Veterans Day Parade here in downtown Jacksonville on Friday. If a veteran needs a cab ride to that, they can use
sure,
this for that.
Sure, of course. Yeah, for sure.
And whatever else they need. And there's a lot to talk about in terms of veterans' mobility and illness. They're twice as likely as non-vets to have a fatal motor vehicle crash. In fact, it's the leading cause of death for veterans home from deployment. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, neither was I, but it's something that hopefully Keep Jack Safe can help out and allow all our military friends to avail themselves of this this opportunity and take advantage of it and use it.
And now I would think
also,
go ahead.
No, also if you're working the parade, that morning, because there's a lot of people in the military that are going to be helping out, and we're going to be there early Friday morning, and we ask you don't worry about picking up breakfast or eating breakfast, because we're bringing the mother load of Krispy Kreme donuts to the location.
Oh, really?
I think like 300-400 dozen, I don't know, whatever it is, and coffee and donuts.
You're fresh. The most popular guy in town.
Hot off the press. Those hot nows, you can't resist them, but we'll be there Friday morning too, so don't worry about breakfast if you can make your way to where the parade will be sort of put together there.
Coffee, donuts, and free cab rides.
Yeah, what else do you need?
And this thing has really taken off. When you started this on New Year's Eve, the demand, I think you were even a little surprised by the demand, right?
Yeah. I think we gave 750 free cab rides New Year's Eve, and it was great. I mean, people who have too much of a good time off the road, and People used it, which was real great. And we wanted everybody to use it. We're going to do it again this year. And with the app now, it's going to be a little more streamlined. And hopefully there'll be enough cabs out there to take everybody home.
Sure. Now, for people that need to know about the app, what is the app?
Well, you can go to keepjacksafe.org, okay. And there's an app there you can download. It's the Fair and Farrah app. But you don't even need that. You can just download your free promo code directly from the website and use that promo code to call a cab company or go to their Z-Trip app and insert that promo code. So there are many ways to use it. So you don't have to have the app to take advantage of. If you don't have a smartphone, you can just go to the website and get your promo code there.
Sure. Now, have you thought, I think the last time we talked about this, you said you were going to try to work in the future with other ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft. Yeah. What's the plan for that?
Well, Uber is not really, they're not really up for doing something like that because you know how Uber works. They look at the demand and then their rates vary based on what's going on at the time. So they were not interested in working with us, but all the cab companies in the First Coast are on board. So even if you're in St. Augustine, there are enough cabs to take you where you want to go and bring you back home.
And again, if you're just tuning in, this week, the week of Valor in Jacksonville leading up to Veterans Day on Friday, you can get a free cab ride anywhere you need to go all week long if you are a veteran. This includes the gratuity. This is a free offer extended to all military personnel in our area. It's the Keep Jack Safe initiative from law firm Farrah and Farrah. As Eddie said, just go to the website keepjacksafe.org. KeepJackSafe.org. Get your unique code, download that, and then you can ride for free. You're going to have to let us know how many calls you get this time.
Sure, Melissa.
It'll be a whole week of them, so
yeah.
I think you'll have a lot.
That's a good thing. We want people to use it.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Sure, thank you.
He's Eddie Farrah of the personal injury firm Farrah & Farrah. Again, that website is KeepJackSafe.org. And in a moment, Culpepper as the Jaguars had a shot, but lose again. That's after this.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
This election year, NPR has been traveling the country.
On the outskirts of Binghamton, New York, 20 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip.
First day of early voting in Texas.
Talking to voters from coast to coast.
People are hurting. People are angry.
Media is biased.
He's not my dream date.
On November 8th, the votes will finally be counted. NPR will have live, round-the-clock coverage. Join us for results, reaction, and analysis on the big night.
We'll have it right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back to the show. Well, finally this hour, the Jaguars had a chance, but lose again.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
With a look at sports now, it's our Monday contributor, Cole Pepper. Always great to see you. Sorry to see the Jaguars just can't catch a break, can they?
No, and I think you can take a look at this from a couple of different angles. You can play the optimist or the pessimist with this. And the optimist, certainly can say that the Jaguars went to the loudest stadium in the NFL and probably should have won. They had a touchdown called back by a call that appeared even after replay to show that the Jaguars running back Chris Ivory had stretched the ball over the goal line. The league has reviewed it. They actually put a video out afterwards on Twitter saying there's a reason why it was not called a touchdown and it was the right call, but that, or so the league says. I still don't think it was the right call. That all being said, the Jaguars' running game looked better than it had all year. They went over 200 yards rushing. The defense shut down Kansas City, and despite four turnovers, again, they probably should have won. The pessimist side, and you can choose which side of this you want to be on, even against a Chiefs team loaded with backups, the Jaguars couldn't win. Four turnovers. Then they had one interception that the Jaguars had in their hands, but Tayshaun Gibson knocked the ball out of Aaron Colvin's hands, broke up his own team's pickoff chances, a very Jaguary thing to do this year.
Oh, man.
Blake Bortles struggled again for the third straight game. A punt returner for the Jaguars fumbled the ball away. They couldn't close the deal in the fourth quarter when they had the ball and a chance to win. So take your pick of which side you want to be on. The fact is the Jaguars are 2-6, either way you slice it, and they're going to play division-leading Houston at home on Sunday.
And how is Shad Khan going to handle this latest loss in terms of changing leadership?
You know, again, I don't really understand why he hasn't made a move yet. I think it's very obvious that the fan base in general has turned in mass. Now, they need something once they start selling season tickets for next year and sponsorships come up for renewal. And so they need something to have hope for the future on this. And I don't know why he hasn't made the move yet. Maybe he's got a date in his mind or he's waiting where I'm going to give them until this point. We're now exactly halfway through the season in terms of number of games played and 2-6. Again, if they were to do the reverse and go 6-2, nobody thinks they will, but if they would go 6-2 in the second half, they still may not make the playoffs. They, you know, likely wouldn't win the division.
All I want to know is, as a longtime Cubs fan, when is Jacksonville going to get its Theo Epstein, Culpepper?
Well, it probably shouldn't take 108 years.
I know.
I think there's probably a number of Jaguars fans who are looking at the World Series and going, that's long suffering.
That's a, oh, believe me, it's and yes.
And feeling like, maybe we're on the track for that. Now, listen, in the NFL, you're just simply not going to go 108 years without winning. It's just it's not going to happen. I'm going to say that now and believe that it's true. But whether it's the Theo Epstein or the, you know, coaching or whatever else, something is not working with the Jaguars right now, and something has to change pretty dramatically. Again, they fired the offensive coordinator. Nathaniel Hackett was the offensive coordinator for the first time. Offense looked a little better, again, the running game in particular, but the quarterback continues to struggle. You're not going to win games in the NFL without a good quarterback.
Lots more football to talk about. Meanwhile, from Cole, college football, the Navy Notre Dame game, high school football.
Yeah, and let's start with the college game. The Gators saw their chances in an SEC East crown take a bit of a hit on the road at Arkansas. No offensive touchdowns in a 31-10 Razorbacks win. Next up are Florida. Gators host South Carolina in Gainesville on Saturday. Georgia, though, helped the Gators' chances for winning that SEC East crown thanks to a game-winning field goal as time expired, 27-24 over Kentucky, who's second place in the SEC East, believe it or not. Georgia plays Auburn next, and Florida State came from behind to beat North Carolina State 24-20. FSU scoring the go-ahead touchdown with just over 3 minutes left to win. FSU hosts Boston College on Friday night. Now, Navy Notre Dame. Second straight week, major college game played here in Jacksonville after Florida-Georgia, Navy and Notre Dame. Great scene. Navy held on to win 28-27 in a thriller. Great atmosphere at Everbank Field and around town. I don't know if you saw as many Navy shirts as I did.
I did. A
lot of Navy families and retired servicemen and women around town, and it was a really great scene. It's really a perfect kind of fit for our city. It'd be great to see the city host one game with Navy every year, and I'd love to see the Army-Navy game played here. It's never been played here, but that is one of the ultimate pageantry games in all of college football.
Last but not least, 21 local teams in the high school football playoffs, says Culpepper. Wow, that's exciting, too.
And I think a few that have a real chance of winning state championships, Trinity Christian, Bowles and Rains, who are both in the same league, so one of the, in the same classification, so one of those could win. Ponte Vedra also. Bowles and Ponte Vedra are the only undefeated teams in the area heading into the postseason. It's been a very good year of high school football in the area, and I think there's some serious chances to bring some hardware back from the championship games.
Good luck to them. And last but not least, your thoughts on the new Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp.
So I like the fact that they're willing to do something different. I am a bit of a baseball traditionalist, and I am so used to the Suns, right, that when I first saw it, I went, oh, really? Is this? I really like some of the uniform changes. I think the red military salute jersey with the bold city across the chest is a great look. That's my favorite of the jerseys. The logo with the road logo hanging on, the shrimp hanging on to the state of Florida has a good kind of local tie-in. It's going to take me a while to think about, hey, are you going to the Shrimps game this weekend, or do we call them the Jumbos for short?
What are people going to call them?
I think it's like one of those things you let the fan base determine what they're going to call them before you kind of come up with a nickname beyond that. I will note that after the initial response was less than warm, I think people are starting to come around to it, and you see a lot on social media, folks really loving the brand and the hats and the jerseys.
That's true. I saw that as well, people snapping up that merchandise. And in the meantime, if you love sports, follow Cole Pepper on Twitter and check out the Sam and Cole podcast there too. Thank you, Cole, as always.
Thanks
for being
Melissa.
Here. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Diane Reams up next with a look at concerns over the three separate branches of government and why many think the system is broken. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow with full Election Day coverage. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.